B-Pod Studios.
Hey, this is WWE Hall of Famer and Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
This week, Wrestling Inside the Ropes is brought to you by Boom Boom Games. Be sure to check out their Facebook page. Just type Boom Boom Games into your Facebook search page. Boom Boom Games is located at 306 Boston Road, North Billerica, Massachusetts, 978-294-2114. It is Tuesday morning as Mike Riley and I record this AEW Revolution recap podcast. The show took place on Sunday night. The big story, Mike Riley, coming out of it is the post-match final explosion. So the AEW champion Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley was an exploding rope, a no ropes exploding barbed wire death match. And Kenny Omega retains over Jon Moxley. This was a really strong match that we're going to go over, but it was over. It came off as a disappointment because the final explosion post-match failed to meet our expectations. So I do wonder, what was everybody expecting here? Was the ring supposed to go up in flames with whoever was inside it? Was the ring post supposed to shoot high in the air? Like, watching the explosions during the match, they weren't heavy. They weren't building filling. They were close contact, small explosives relative to where they were. And that's what happened at the end. They set off the explosions that didn't go off. Maybe the ring sparklers on the posts didn't help. But I wonder what people's expectations here were, Mike. Did they expect the ring to just go up in flames with everybody in it just going down in a bottomless pit of an abyss? Like, what were we looking for here? Mike, what'd you think?
So, you know, to your point with the match, and I thought it was a great match. We'll talk about it, like you said. But yes, the ending, disappointing. I was one of the many that were disappointed. And I think the thing here, Jimmy, is that you look back. Go back to the old, I know it's not a totally different promotion, but look at WWE. Remember that match between Brock Lesnar and the Big Show when the ring imploded, right? With the
Didn't know that was coming. That was a surprise.
But I think a lot of stuff like that could have been in people's minds like, all right, we're probably going to have an explosion too. This is the last match of the night. Why not just blow the whole thing up? Expectations were high. Somebody failed behind the scenes on this. And it made social media into an uproar. And now AEW will not allow Twitter to have that posted on the social media with the GIFs or the GIFs, whatever you call it, potato, potato. You know, they paid so much money there, they're embarrassed by it. A company that's this young with the chance to really have that wow effect, they failed. They failed the viewer here. And it's too bad because the show was really good. And unfortunately, as Vince McMahon once did say, something along the lines of, they're always going to remember the finish, right? The last part. Yep. And that's what's going to be the impact of this particular show right here.
And that is unfortunate because what happens is, and this happens in real sports too, is you see the highlight tape of Mac Jones. And it's like, oh, he can do this. Or Trevor Lawrence, whoever. And they can do all this.
Yep.
So now we've seen... we've seen the clips on YouTube and Daily Motion of Onita versus Funk, and look at, he set this guy on fire and he went into this. And so that was kind of our expectation, is that everybody burns in hell, right? Like, everybody explodes, the ring goes up in flames. It just wasn't reality. Like, I was shocked that they did this match anyway because of all the blood. We're still in a pandemic, as far as I know, unless that changed and I just missed it. But I'm still washing my hands and socially distancing and wearing a mask and, you know, keeping a very small bubble in life. Mm-hmm. But so I'm surprised that they let all this blood happen. But, you know, Florida's a different world, right? So
blood, and look at the referee, too. He was dressed up
hazmat suit, right? Right? Like, yeah. there was a protocol where if this pandemic got really bad, that I would be running a mixer in a hazmat suit. Jeez. Right. So like I've actually been fitted for a hazmat suit, right?
Have you really?
And,
yeah, no kidding.
And you know, not to go on the hazmat suit thing, but they made JR and Tony Schiavone and Excalibur and Don Callis all really hyped this up on commentary,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the flame resistant stuff that they had to be doused in, the ring's going to blow up, because that's their job as commentators, to hype what could happen. And so now the ring doesn't go up in flames. Sorry, that's a rookie mistake. My phone's going off now. So the ring is now, they're promoting the fact that this ring is going to go up in flames, and it doesn't. And I have tried like hell to find out what happened and why it didn't work. And I've gotten nothing from anybody, yeah. right? So it's a massive fail. So now what they've done, and I think this is smart, by the way, post-match, Jon Moxley gets on the house mic, and Tony Khan, post-show in his media avail, both emphasize the part of the story that, oh, well, Kenny Omega can't build a bomb properly.
Kenny Omega may be a tough son of a bitch, but he can't make an exploding ring worth a shit. I see more dangerous shit on ridiculousness on MTV with a shit. I'm still standing, bitch. Oh. Oh. Just not well. Oh.
The story kind of gave us an out for the ring not completely exploding and killing both guys, because, again, it was Kenny's construction, this thing he built to be the Moxley extermination chamber. And you saw him kind of build it crudely with a hammer, and it looked like a great plan. And to be fair, it worked all through the match. And Kenny's such a great wrestler. He survived it, and he got to the finish, and he was in trouble. The Good Brothers came out to help him. You know, so there was a story there. But again, there's only so much you can really do with explosions without really hurting people. So I think that's why it was good to give us an out with a story when we didn't actually explode the ring, that maybe Kenny's craftsmanship as a bomb builder is not his forte. Maybe he should stick to wrestling.
So it's not the promotion's fault that the explosions didn't go off. It's Kenny Omega's fault. It's the heel's fault for building a faulty bomb.
Yep.
Callis and Omega should open up Dynamite on Wednesday night laughing and mocking the fact that the fans expected to see them blow up a ring. Put all the heat on them for creating a bad bomb. And if I look back in history of wrestling promotions, right? So it's because it's the heel who built it. It's not the promotion's fault. It's the villain's fault. So go back to SummerSlam 1997. The Hart Foundation, through all these stipulations that if Bret Hart loses, I'm never going to work in the U.S. again. If Steve Austin loses, he's going to kiss Owen Hart's ass. If the Bulldog loses, he's going to eat dog food. If the Anvil loses, he's going to shave his beard. So the Anvil never shaved his goatee. And Bruce Pritchard would later say in a podcast that, oh, well, we didn't promote these things. The villains promoted them. So this is wrestling 101, is that, oh, the villain, it's the villain's fault. And it's a good swing point strategy to all of this.
Yeah, and an easy spin, easy way to own it right there. Also, you know, we haven't talked about Eddie Kingston, by the way, coming out to help his friend Jon Moxley at the end. And again, you know, he didn't know about the explosion and the essential fart in church it was, but he sold it really well. I thought Eddie Kingston sold it well. He did his job to protect his friend, Jon Moxley, right there. And he didn't have to. He could have been like, okay, whatever. But he just did his job thinking it was going to be a lot worse. And yeah, and that was my same thought process too, where you talk about there with the whole, you know, just own it. You guys screwed up. Just have fun with it at this point now and just make a story on it with Kenny Omega that it was his idea. Yeah, we know in real life it was not. Someone behind the scenes, you have all this money though. That's what I'm really disappointed about. AEW, Tony Khan's a billionaire, right? He's an owner of an NFL franchise. It's a revenue share league. How do you not have to these top shelf pyros and potentially test it multiple times during the day? He failed. Someone, it's under Tony Khan's watch, they failed everyone here for the expectations.
So they did test them out, but you can only test explosions so much. So more recently, we saw the Undertaker documentary. And oh, right. A pyro guy who has a long history of doing good pyro set the Undertaker on fire and got fired for it. So when you're dealing with explosions, And when you're dealing with pyro, things can go wrong. It's live TV, and some things just aren't meant to be. But I just go back
outdoors,
to, I go back to, yup, it was a sparkler. Yup, the Gilbert stuff is in play. But if you look at the context of the match and how the explosions were, you can see clear as day, they were local, they were small, and they were safe, right? So unless the ring is going to just all of a sudden just set a flame, you weren't going to get what you expected.
Yeah.
And there's the other thing about the fire marshal. Like, you can't just put a bunch of smoke in the air, open air or not. Like, that becomes a hazard to 1,300 fans who are in the building. So there's all these layers that people just aren't thinking about because they're just seeing like, oh, wow, that sucked. And by the way, that's the right emotion to have. But you have to go beyond that and say, well, when it hits the 30-minute mark, it's going to explode what hasn't been exploded yet, which is something they put on the graphic before, or Excalibur said, I know I've seen it or heard it somewhere. So that's your understanding, but you know, they're hyping up on commentary, hey, the ring's going to blow up. Okay, so now you have to blow up the ring. Oh no, but the villain, it's Kenny Omega building a bad bomb.
Yeah.
Right? So it makes me think, Mike, that was the plan all along.
Okay. Okay, so just
don't know that. No, that's interesting. I tried to find out.
Yeah.
But if the idea is you're going to hype this match and hype this match, it's pro wrestling. It's the circus, right? Yeah. And that's what we always forget. The whole point of Kenny Omega now is he's the villain champion. He's the champion who you're going to despise for whatever he does. So like, he builds this exploding ring and it doesn't explode.
And he's
so now they come on TV on Wednesday night and they're like, ha ha ha, you thought we were really going to explode the ring? No, we weren't.
And he's got the heat with the Good Brothers on his side who interfered, and it is a good heel situation here for that. I thought that, you know, obviously with the end of the match there, the whole reaction being part of that, like, okay, disappointment. But it just, there was one point in the match, Jimmy, where I thought it started to go a little south without any warning of when that, you know, there was no warning of 10 minutes left. The announcers had to tell you.
Shivani was keeping that up. There was a sound effect that went off at about the 12 minute mark.
Right.
But Tony Schiavone was trying to keep the audience aware of, like, okay, we've started the timer. There's 20 minutes left. There's 10 minutes left. I think we're under 6 minutes left now.
Right. Someone screwed up there too. What if you were in the crowd? You'd have no idea. You should have at least the Titan time.
Unless there was a sound going off in the crowd.
I think that was everywhere with that little sound effect there. It was like almost like the end of the world was coming. It seemed like with 10 minutes left, and it's like, okay, what the hell is this? Zero communication. I hated that. But to Shivani's credit, what he did for the at-home audience, yes. I don't know. We weren't there, but I hope they had something for them, maybe a Jumbotron or something, but it was not good. It was bad.
So. The timer didn't come on until there was a minute left and the match was over and it didn't matter. So
right.
I thought this match was really good. I thought it was well thought out. I thought the finish of the actual match was well done. I was pissed at how Kenny Omega retained. He's a bad guy, and I'm supposed to feel cheated when Gallows and Anderson come out and interfere in the match and help Kenny Omega beat Jon Moxley. My mind, I wasn't expecting interference in the main event, considering the pay-per-view had so many run-ins and interference. And that was a common theme here, and I kind of expected more. So here's the finish, right? Omega nails several V-triggers on Moxley. Omega sets up Moxley for the one-winged angel and hits him with it. And then Moxley kicks the rope to set off an explosion. And it blinded Omega. And it was a nice way to protect Kenny Omega's one-winged angel finish and still have it not beat Moxley. That was my favorite explosion of the match. I thought it was well-placed and well-timed. And after that, Moxley grabs the barbed wire baseball bat. Gallows and Anderson come out. Eventually, Moxley goes through a chair via one-winged angel. And here's the key detail. Omega pinned Moxley on the same side of the ring that the explosion had already gone off on, and he hooked both legs. So it protects John Moxley because he can't kick the rope because the explosion's already gone. So with all that cheating, Omega hitting his finisher twice, and then he hooks both legs and he pins him on the side of the ring that the explosion can't go off. I thought that aspect of the finish was great. It was so good. It was such great attention to detail.
Yeah. And you know what? In this whole match too, to me, Jimmy, the thing I got out of it, it had a real feel for me. Okay. We talk about even at the beginning with the official, with the hazmat suit, but even I just had a real tense feeling during this whole match, the barbed wire on the ropes. And then you had, who's going to go into the ropes first and then have the explosion happen right there. Also, Moxley with the blood on his face, real feel. It had the reminisce of Stone Cold Steve Austin's bloody face during WrestleMania 13, his match against Bret Hart. Moxley at one point wrapping barbed wire around his bicep. Tell me you didn't cringe on that. Oh, my gosh. He just sold everything so well. And yes, with that explosion there too, putting his foot up on the rope to save himself of that two count. Awesome. I loved the whole concept of the match here and how it all played out up until the very end. But it's just, they really went all out here. Moxley and Omega. And for the whole build up here from, you know, a lot of people had questions of what to expect. They delivered really well.
Just my closing thought on this is I went into this match thinking Omega was going to retain, but I didn't know. And that was one of the things that I really liked about this match is it's Moxley's, because Moxley is more of a deathmatch wrestler, although I think Kenny Omega is sneakily getting into that conversation. I don't know if he needs it, but maybe he does need it. But I didn't know who was going to walk out as champion. And that's something that I really, really liked. And it's the first time. So I like Moxley, right? I didn't think his run as champion was as good as it could have been because the only time I felt as a champion he was threatened was his match against Kenny Omega. And maybe I thought MJF was going to win, but I didn't really like really strongly think MJF was going to win. But the two matches with Omega, I thought Omega was going to win Winter's Coming back in December, but I didn't know that. And then this one, I didn't know the outcome. I assumed it was Omega because of where I think they're going with Omega and the Belt Collector and the Cleaner and all that stuff. But I may have to look back at Jon Moxley and kind of reevaluate his run as champion because I feel like his run as champion, there wasn't a threat there, but there were some good details into his character. His matches, they all made sense. They were all logical. And there should be an appreciation for a wrestler, in this case, Jon Moxley, who puts that type of time and effort and detail and preparation into all of his work.
He's also, when you think about it, he is the pandemic champion because, you know, he did win the crowd there at Revolution last year. But then there was a short time when AEW did not have the crowd and, you know, their whole buildup. But he answered the bell. I was wrong. I thought Moxley was going to win the match. Go ahead, attack me, please. I thought he was going to win. I just did not believe in Kenny Omega. They're obviously going that route here. I'm excited to see what is going to play out now after the explosion and the push the Good Brothers get. But it just seems like that Moxley is going, he's got a kid on the way. He's taking some time off. He deserves some time off. He has done everything that has been asked of him in the company. And I don't see him returning, Jimmy, until Double or Nothing. And that'll be the 2-year anniversary of his debut on AEW. So I think he'll have some sort of an interference or some sort of a particular storyline building up to Double or Nothing. I think we're not going to see Jon Moxley for a while on AEW television.
I kind of think the next move for Moxley is a tag team with Eddie Kingston, and they go for the tag belts off of the Young Bucks, and you get the Young Bucks and Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston in the same ring at the same time.
That'd be cool.
That might be the next move because that seems to be the next transition story after. I assume Eddie Kingston is going for Kenny Omega's world title, and then they can play off of that.
Yep.
Next up on the agenda, if we're kind of working backwards as to what we liked and what I liked and what you liked, Mike, the street fight.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The pre-taped street fight, it was Sting and Darby Allin against Team Taz's Ricky Starks and the FTW champion, Brian Cage. This was shot cinematic style inside a warehouse with a ring in it. Sting pins Ricky Starks after a Scorpion Death Drop. I like this match. I like the pace of this match. I like the long movie fight scene style of this match. I was shocked that Sting scored a pinfall in this match, but he did. Mike, I know this was your favorite match of the evening. Tell us why.
So, you know, Justin Barrasso, a great friend of the show, I think he reported that the show, the match was taped on Sunday.
And he did report that it was taped. Tell me why you like this match the most out of all the matches on the show.
The fact that they edited so quickly did a really nice job. But I'll tell you one thing I didn't like real quick. I did not like the commentary in the match. I think they could have done without there. I tried to give it a chance at first. Then it was like, no. This is a cinematic match. Let the editing work tell the story. But on the good side of the match here, I mean, I love the whole buildup. There was a scene, a particular part where Jigsaw, the horror character Jigsaw, was in there during Sting's entrance. Sting, I thought, looked great. He had a nice little bone addition to his face like Darby Allin. And part of his neck was painted black, too, at the beginning. He looked good early here. The Stinger splash on the Starks, which was good. Starks, I thought, had a really good spot here telling Sting, you are not the icon. Darby with the coffin drop off the top of the pole. Some really good spots here. And Taz's son, Hook, who came out, it looked like that could have been a major turning point for Cage and Starks at one point. But again, Sting got the win, his first pay-per-view win since 2013. And you bring in a guy with the caliber of Sting, the face of the WCW for years, and a chance to make him that look that good right there in a cinematic match. They did it. They delivered. Sting looked awesome. And if you have more opportunities to do something like this, to have Sting in a cinematic match where he looked that darn good, you do it. There is a reason why he's in AEW. There is a reason why they know they can draw with money here with Sting. He's got a following. If he's going to look that good in cinematic matches, give me more Sting in cinematic matches. This match was great. Loved it.
So I thought the most important thing is they showcased Sting well, but I loved how Darby Allin was produced. And I didn't know that Darby Allin was a film major, and he produced 90% of this match.
Really?
His idea, his concept, he worked with Tony Khan, and I did not know that. That's until cool. Until some of the post-show media came out. Mm-hmm. Darby Allin was produced spectacular. He's running up walls. Brian Cage is carrying him up a flight of stairs in a vertical suplex position. I thought that this was the best I've seen Darby Allin since his matches with Cody. I really thought that this, you're there for Sting, and you understand that Sting is there to help Darby win. And I thought that they did the best in showing what Darby Allin is really about, as far as his work and his athleticism. You know, they did a slingshot, they being Starks and Cage, did one of those slingshots and put Darby Allin through a broken plate glass window.
Yeah.
And it was a great visual. The main nitpick that I had in this match was Sting had an advantage over Ricky Starks early in the match with a choke. And the camera shot goes from in the ring to a shot down the warehouse of Allin and Cage. And I didn't like that because Sting has an advantage, and now you're just going down to some other scene. It just kind of didn't make sense to me. I thought maybe if they wanted to showcase both, they could do a pitcher in pitcher, or you move the combatants where they're close enough together where then you can break off into a single fight. That's the only kind of nitpick, but that is also how movie fight scenes are shot. And I'm not a big movie guy, but I've seen enough movies where I understand that sometimes you're transitioning around fights. Yeah. So for wrestling, it's a new concept. I think it's a new concept.
Yeah. And you know what? And the fact if it was taped earlier in the day, you know, editing situation, I'm going to cut him a little bit of a slack there on that one. But this was, and the other thing I thought of, the Santana and Ortiz versus Best Friends feud, that cinematic match, I thought that was a little better than this one. But this one, I really thought it was a perfect situation for Sting right here. Tag team, Darby Allin, his cinematic background now you're telling us about. Everything was great. The finish with Sting showing his face there at the end. I had a, you know, even like watching it in the warehouse there, the music in the background too, all of the outside guys in the mask with the Sting and Darby Allin.
The 20 guys who came in to take out the team. Yeah.
Like
Taz was complaining about, oh, it's 20 against two. That's not fair.
That was the other thing too. I mean, Taz, I know, was on commentary, and that's why I didn't like the commentary. I think if Taz is so important to these two guys, he should have been a part of that match.
Said so after. He's like, oh, maybe I should have went with them. But on the commentary thing, Mike, and this was a note I had for later, but since you bring up Taz, I thought Taz and Don Callis specifically on commentary for their matches added a lot to the story that the villains are trying to portray here. And I hate three-man booths. I'm not a fan of four-man booths. I want two announcers, and that's it. But I thought that Taz and Don Callis both added to the equation, and I thought Tony Schiavone was great on this show. I thought Tony Schiavone has hit his stride as far as his enthusiasm, his passion for it. It's all there. He is so deep into loving wrestling again, and I thought it was really great. I thought Tony Schiavone was tremendous on this show.
Number one. And just on the Taz note there, he did have a really good spot, like, oh, just wait, there's more coming. So he gave you that tease after. I thought that was really cool there. But to your point on Schiavone, you know, every time I see Jim Ross come out with the Oklahoma Boomer Sooner, and he's always just so happy shaking JR's hand. He has so much respect for Jim Ross. And you're right, the passion there, you can hear it in his voice. You can see it on the smile on his face. And having met Tony a couple of times, really nice guy. He's the real deal, man. So good for him. He loves pro wrestling, and that's what you want. He's a good ambassador for AEW.
Yep, I agree. Do you have any more thoughts on the cinematic match before I move next?
Good match. That's it. Boom.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The AEW Tag Team Championship opened up the show. It was the Young Bucks against Chris Jericho and MJF with Wardlow. The Young Bucks hit the Meltzer driver on Jericho for a clean pin. I thought this was a good, entertaining first match. The Bucks had to really fight and scrap and claw to win this. Jericho and MJF as these dirty villains, these jerks, these smarmy, arrogant, just dirty, cheating villains. I thought they had a really nice rhythm to the match, I want to say. There's a lot in this match, too much for me to really detail, I would say. But I think that the real truth in this match is the Bucks just wanted to work with Jericho and MJF. And I thought that there was a chance that MJF and Jericho were going to win the titles and, you know, have a run as tag team champions. But then when I thought about it, I'm like, look at Jericho's history on pay-per-views recently. His last win on pay-per-view was beating Cody. So Jericho right now is doing promos and winning matches he's supposed to win and losing matches he's supposed to lose. So loses to the Young Bucks clean, loses to MJF, loses to Orange Cassidy, is part of the loss at Stadium Stampede, and drops the title to Jon Moxley. those are Jericho's big matches. So Jericho is losing to get other people in proper positions. And of course, now, because Jericho took the loss, Wednesday night, they're going to have an Inner Circle meeting. And if I had to guess, MJF is going to kick out Chris, is going to kick Chris Jericho out of the Inner Circle.
Yeah.
Mike, what do you think about this match?
Yeah, and just to piggyback on your point there with him putting over talent, another perfect example right there. Continue, not that MJF needs to be put over, but just more chance to elevate his character right there. And he would kick him out there on that Inner Circle meeting there. But yeah, I thought it was good. A couple of good spots there with Wardlow trying to interrupt on the apron where Jericho eventually got him off the mat. And, you know, I think that could be a turning point here too, or a special situation with the Inner Circle of him making a move going against Jericho potentially. I thought MJF had, you know, he said like seven or eight times, like eight times actually to be exact, on Nick Jackson, the DX.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I thought that was good. The Canadian killer move by MJF sold really well. Good match. Good opening match right here. Young Bucks retain. Just one other note on this too. I know we went on commentary, not on the match itself, but Jim Ross sounded terrible at the beginning. Someone thankfully got him a cough drop because he did carry out there throughout the end, but then he just started to sound really bad at the end of the night too. So I had a hard time watching this match here. I took notes on Jim Ross. I'm like, oh my God, please, someone get Shivani in there play-by-play or Excalibur. Get him off this match. It sounded bad. So I had a little bitter taste of me, like more distraction with Jim Ross. Hopefully he was okay instead of the match here at points.
Little throat soreness always hurts. I mean, when you do as much audio as JR does, I mean, it's bound to hit you at some point, right?
Of course.
So what happens next with Chris Jericho? He's probably getting kicked out of the Inner Circle. We'll see on Wednesday night.
You make him a face? I'd have him go face, wouldn't you?
I think he's already in that between phase. When they're singing your song to the ring, they've been doing that for a year now.
He's so over.
So it's been there, and you know, part of it is like, wow, we're live. We have people and sing along, and so they'll probably have some other match with MJF and Jericho. Maybe they'll expand it out. Maybe they'll be divided. Like there'll be two Inner Circles. It'll be NWO Black and White and NWO Wolfpack or something like that.
That'd be cool.
Or Jericho just goes off as a single, and Jericho with this new show that AEW is going to do with Shivani and Paul White, maybe Wednesday night is going to be Jericho, Jim Ross, and Excalibur on commentary.
Nice.
Maybe that's the transition.
I'd love that. Jericho on commentary is fantastic.
Because Tony Schiavone is doing a lot of stuff that people don't know about behind the scenes in AEW too. So to take that off his plate, you know, I mean, Tony can just do everything. And as this has become now the Tony Schiavone Love Fest podcast, something that I didn't love, Mike.
Yeah.
Christian was the big signing for AEW. The big hyped up Hall of Fame level talent. I'm happy that Christian Cage gets a payday. I'm not happy that they hyped him as much as they did, because this is essentially Tony Khan wanted Edge. He couldn't get Edge. Edge went to WWE and he's on his run now. He's going to main event WrestleMania. And they medically cleared him. So now Christian gets medically cleared by WWE. They don't sign him to a long-term contract. I'm sure in the same way that the Big Show's transition to AEW was amicable with Christian. But he's not... When he went from WWE to Impact, TNA, I thought it was going to be a bigger deal than it was. And it wasn't. Because Christian is missing that it factor. That piece of the pie that puts him in that space of being the guy, of being a main event guy. Because if WWE felt that way, they would have signed him to a long-term contract. They don't have him just show up at the Royal Rumble and Edge is like, oh my God, it's Christian. He's having his moments. So Christian is going to get paid. WWE PR didn't know about it, obviously, because early last week, they put a tweet with Edge and Christian Cage and the Usos and hoping that we were going to see this match. So this was kind of kept under wraps, or it was a last minute deal or whatever, but Christian Cage is now All Elite. Mike, what'd you think?
Yeah, and Tony Khan talked about that in his post-Revolution press conference there, saying that he realized that Cage was not under contract with WWE and, you know, the mutual respect between both of them there. And yeah, with the hype up from Paul White on Dynamite for the go-home show for Revolution, and then Tony Khan on the AEW podcast with Aubrey Edwards and Tony Schiavone building this up here, really, you know, it had me thinking, like I talked about last week. Yeah, Christian was on my radar for one of them, but I thought it was going to be Brock Lesnar. I had a real feel, just an inkling that it was going to be him. And then, of course, I didn't rule out CM Punk, but just like anticlimactic, like you had Paul White make this big announcement on Dynamite, and he's telling you, you got to watch Sunday, grab the viewer. I think that was great and so forth. But why not have him come out and say, all right, here is the newest member of AEW. Freaking own it, guys. Like, that's your guy that wanted to present him. Have him come out there and make the formal presentation, build it up. Even if the crowd doesn't really buy it too much. I thought they were pretty into Christian coming out, though. They liked it. He didn't cut a promo or anything. He just came out. That was it.
No, and Mike, people like Christian Cage. I'm just telling you, Christian Cage isn't a needle mover.
No, I know, but I think that they could have built it up more on that sense there. You're right. The needle mover, though, yeah, like he was world champion in WWE. Okay. Was that great? I mean, I don't remember him as a world champion. Do you? I think people remember him more as a tag team with Edge.
It was coming off of Edge's injury, I believe, after WrestleMania 29.
Yep.
And he won a ladder match, I think, to become the world champion. I think he also won the world title off of Randy Orton by a disqualification at one of the Money in the Bank pay-per-views. It might have been the one in Chicago that Punk won the WWE title.
2013. Yeah, that sounds right. Or was it
2011? 2011.
Okay. With the John Cena. Okay. Yeah. So I just like, I look at, you know, him, he's a tag team guy. I don't look at him as a big main event guy, but obviously, you know, it's Tony Khan's way of saying, hey, we got another guy from Vince. They screwed up on the contract. They have Edge in WrestleMania. So we're going to have Edge's boy now, Edge's friend, rather, and let's take advantage of this. The buildup didn't do much for me. It was like, okay. I mean, happy for him. I think it's great, but doesn't do much.
So there would have been, I think that if it had been Okada, I think if it had been Nick Aldis, you would have gotten better. They wouldn't be needle movers, but you would have had a more of an understanding of it because Okada's the most decorated Japanese wrestler in the world right now. And Nick Aldis is the NWA champion. And so there's a prestige that can be promoted with that. Even if I don't think that either one of those are going to move the needle for their Wednesday night show, there's a justification that they could over time be needle movers. And if you got Okada from Japan, like that's an international grab that is good for global business.
Right.
The NWA champion is more of a, oh, look, we have another partnership here. So we're going to try to co-brand with the NWA. So now you can have Omega versus Aldis, or you can, in the same way that they use the NWA women's champion, you can feature Nick Aldis against Mike Bennett. And I know Mike Bennett's under a Ring of Honor deal, but he's worked for the NWA before. Something along those lines. You could have another match with Cody and Nick Aldis for the NWA championship if you wanted to. Like there are a couple different directions. I don't know who Christian Cage is programmed with. I don't.
No, but so you talk about all these other promotions right there, but I think the big point for AEW here is that we're going to get someone that was formerly WWE, and people know Christian, and I think that was their big splash to do that right there. And, you know, Christian is not in the WWE Hall of Fame. He's not. And nope. That was another part there, too. The Paul White said Hall of Fame caliber worthy. So another thing to read between the lines right there.
I mean, he is. From a talent standpoint,
oh, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
In the Hall of Fame, yeah.
Without question, yeah.
Especially if you're going to have Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame and, you know, there are other people who are just there because, oh, they can do a good promo and things, and they needed, you know, so many people in the Hall of Fame. But, yeah. You know, it's all, who does Vince want to put in at any time? That's what the WWE Hall of Fame is. But it means a lot to a lot of people. Last thing from AEW is in your text to me, the ladder match was pretty good. Good spot for Ethan Page to debut. Looking forward to seeing him get a run in AEW. Tell me why you like the ladder match, Mike.
So just to talk about Ethan Page real quick, yep. I mean, the kid's 31 years old. He actually runs a promotion in Canada called Alpha One, former tag team champion with Josh Alexander. I think it's one of the longest reigns of tag team championships in Impact.
They were the Impact champions as the North.
Yes, but I think it's one of the longest runs in that promotion too. Cody Rhodes loves Ethan Page, loves him. And I would love to see these two feud. Pretty much Page has been, he's been a heel his whole time, his whole career, I guess you could say. He had a really good dog collar match too with MJF a couple of years ago in Canada. But I thought a good spot for Page here when he climbed the ladder with Cody, and he had a really awesome razor's edge toss to Scorpio Sky onto the ladder with Lance Archer stuck between the legs. So I think that's a tease right here for that spot where he climbed the ladder with Cody for those two to have a feud. They've worked together. Cody likes him. Give me it. And Cody likes being the face too, Jimmy, right? We know that. He likes being the baby face. This is a great opportunity here for Ethan Page to feud with Cody Rhodes. The match, though, Scorpio Sky, just smashing Cody's injured shoulder and then pie-facing him down to the mat, I think he is a legitimate threat to become the new TNT champion this Wednesday night against Darby Allin. He's about to get a good push here. Even if he doesn't get the title, really good spot for Darby Allin and to see how he continues to progress along in his career in AEW. Good match. I thought the ladder match was good.
So I think the big takeaway is Scorpio Sky grabbing the brass ring. Like, they put a literal brass ring up there. And they do a lot of troll jobs of WWE. I thought this was a really good troll job by them, by putting a massive donut, a massive brass ring above the ring, and you had to climb the ladder and grab the brass ring. I thought it was hilarious.
It was no Money in the Bank.
No, it wasn't. I like Scorpio Sky. I think he's a great talent. I think he was the first person to get a pinfall victory over Chris Jericho. So they think highly of him. If that's not right, then I apologize and I'm wrong. But I think Scorpio Sky and Darby Allin are going to have a banger of a match on Wednesday. And I found it very interesting that they played up the idea that Darby Allin could forfeit the title if he's not physically ready to compete.
Right.
So maybe you have a situation where Darby is injured, he's battered, and Scorpio Sky picks up the pieces of what is there. And now you have a villain Scorpio Sky as the TNT champion and Darby Allin chasing.
That would be cool. That'd be cool. Build up that title even more. Build it up. Good spot right there. And I'm excited for this one on Wednesday night.
The only other thing that I want to say about this show is I thought Matt Hardy and Adam Page had a really good match. I thought the women's title match was a really good match. But I didn't think that either one of them had anything special in them. I was kind of hoping that Butcher and Blade would win the tag team casino battle royale thing because they've just been such a mainstay in that tag team division. So those are my only other quick thoughts as we wrap up the AEW Revolution aspect of the podcast. Mike, did you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, just on the Matt Hardy thing, I wouldn't be shocked if the payout is really nothing after it's revealed that Hardy may have had the cash in his own little corporation. So I thought, you know, his job is to put over young talent right now. And I listened to the interview you had with him the other day. Really good stuff right there. So, you know, I think that his job is to, you know, put over Adam Page right there and do whatever he can. So good for Matt Hardy right there. The women's match, you talk about that, didn't do much for me. That championship match, I didn't really care too much for that. But overall, I thought this was a good show. Unfortunately, it's going to have that particular ending with the explosion people talk about for years. But they did a good job, and I still love that it's quarterly pay-per-views. Quarterly pay-per-views in AEW, the formula works. Keep it going. And Double or Nothing, Jimmy, it's also going to be a Sunday night again.
So yep, Tony Khan said that he wants to do Sunday nights except during football season.
Yeah, so they're riding this out. So there you go.
Well, that's the wrestling audience is conditioned for Sunday night pay-per-views, and yep, they're trying to expand that. I don't like it.
I know.
I really don't like it. I like the Saturday night pay-per-view. I enjoy being able to enjoy a Saturday night pay-per-view and not having to worry about waking up the next morning exhausted from it. You know, that's why I like the WWE pay-per-views, which are over 10 and you know, we get the podcast done by 11, and you know, it's just it's a personal preference.
No, I know, and it's a holiday weekend. I hope he doesn't do 8 o'clock. He probably will. Move it up to 7, please.
No, 7 pre-show, 8 o'clock pay-per-view, and then we're here until midnight. So
I know, I love the 7 though. WWE's been doing the 7.
Yep, and I don't think that that's going to change. WWE, as we transition here to a few final thoughts.
Yep.
WWE Network released information for subscribers to jump to the Peacock network. The thing, and I don't like, I like the WWE Network as is. I don't like that they sold their rights. And what I really don't like is, it's going to take until SummerSlam to get all of the pay-per-views up there and some archival footage up there. Like, that sucks. Like, one of my favorite things to do is just stick a show that's a favorite of mine in the background and watch it. Mike, I love professional wrestling. I love watching historical stuff. I love watching current stuff. And I can't make anybody love professional wrestling like I do, but I constantly have something from the network on in the background unless I'm watching, you know, one of the local sports teams or something like that, because that's how I feel. That is my passion for pro wrestling, sports entertainment. So I hate this transition. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. But I understand it's a business.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. So they have, if you get in now, you can get it for $2.50 instead of $5 for the first 4 months or whatever. It's stupid. Yeah. Pay the $100 for the year. It's fine. Then you don't have to worry about it. And then we can be angry when the stream doesn't work because it can't handle it. But hey, WWE is getting $1 billion for it for 5 years. So good for them.
Yeah. Money talks. I'm not happy about the encyclopedia aspect too, because it's always cool to look back. You might have a fact or something, and you know, you just want to go see a particular interview on a show or a match or whatever, and you don't have that aspect right there. I think at the very least, hopefully, they, if they can try to figure out a way to, I don't know, even something on a website, log in there, it'll be at your fingertips until we load it onto television or something. Figure out a way, guys, something, please, because that's a really long time. You got WrestleMania. And then of course you want to talk about SummerSlam being your second biggest show of the year, which they have primed themselves on. But that really should be in there immediately. And, you know, it's just the Peacock network. You will,
it's not hard to do, Mike. They have all the infrastructure. They have all the work done. All they have to do is literally click and drag things over. That's all that they have to do.
Preaching
to the choir. Already there. And it annoys me to no degree that they're doing this.
But you're going to have Peacock Network on Fastlane and also the network, and then that's it. Boom. Then it goes all Peacock Network. So money talks, disappointing. Fans lose out on this one to go back into the archives.
Yep.
Sometimes money sucks, doesn't it?
What's that?
Sometimes money sucks.
No, money is great if you have it and you can just do things with it.
Right.
But in the end, you can't take all this stuff with you. So like, you do the best you can and you work within the system. But like, yeah, I'm not paying $1 billion for a network.
No.
Like, I'm not. Like, right. I'm just not. Like, WrestleMania announced ticket sales. That's next week. The low price is $35. The high price is $3,500. Like, that's stupid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, I get it. I get it, but like, it's two nights. They have a double night pass. They're doing WrestleMania with people, which is great. I wouldn't have priced it at that.
And I think, you know, WrestleMania,
unless they know something that we don't know, Mike. Again, we just had a bloody barbed wire match in Florida. So there's, you know, there's no safety protocols, right? Like, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stop.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to stop.
No. I mean, they're planning to have 25,000. They're planning to. So the fact that it's $3,500, that's insane. If you really want to go to WrestleMania, folks, if you've never been, go ahead. All the power to you. I'm not going. I know you're not planning to go, Jimmy.
I'm not going. No.
Yeah, there you go. So it's just like too much. So the fact that they're doing everything they can to squeeze out here $3,500, but the tickets are on sale next week. I found that interesting. They're waiting to the last minute here to really push that out. And traditionally, of course, it's been on sale 6 months in advance. I'm just excited to have a live crowd back for WWE, especially WrestleMania, where it got robbed last year. And it's going to be interesting to see. I think this will be the blueprint for WWE phasing back into a potential live audience with limited crowd. Where they can do it is going to be the million-dollar question. I've heard Mississippi is a possibility for some, Georgia, even obviously Florida as well, down the line for Raws and SmackDowns. But this is going to be the beginning of that phase right here to test out the waters with live crowd returning to WWE live programming.
Yeah. So last thing I have in my notes, Raw, this is from your text message. Raw tonight, Miz just lost his rematch to open up Raw. Not too surprising, but felt like a squash for Lashley and Miz being on this early in the night. Continue that thought, Mike.
I just thought that, first of all, do we even hear about the Miz getting a rematch?
Was last night on Raw.
I know that, but
changed it on the fly, because the original promotion that went out for Raw was Bobby Lashley championship celebration, and then it changed. And it changed to Miz getting his rematch.
Okay, there you go. So there was no promotion to it until that change right there. Yep. I was really surprised, especially in the first 20 minutes of the show. So, you know, here's a great moment last week. Bobby Lashley being a new champion, really excited about it. And the Miz holding on to it for 8 days. I just think it makes the Miz look, I mean, not that he'd look super weak with the, you know, the fact that he held it for 8 days, but it makes it look even worse that he had it for 8 days in a squash match just like that. I thought at the beginning of a show, I think they could have had this as the main event, build it up. And I didn't like it. I didn't like how they gave it to him that early and just boom. So it just makes the Miz look weak, weak, weak. Didn't like it.
So I disagree with you and Joe Murray on text, because we had a text back and forth about this, about how you guys see the Miz. I see the Miz as the snake weasel villain. And he's up against a tough, badass wrestler who has shoot fighting on his resume, right? So Bobby Lashley is promoted as the MMA shoot fighter. Miz is promoted as the sports entertainer. So how should the match go? It should be Miz running around like a coward, as Daniel Bryan pointed out in a promo. He wrestles like a coward. In this case, it's because that's the Miz's character. He tried to use MVP and Lashley to get the WWE title. He did successfully use them. And then he tried to do whatever it took to get out of his agreement. That's what a villain does. That is not looking weak. That is the character of the Miz being a snake, being a weasel. So, like, how did you want him to work the match? Like, the matchup, he's running around the ring trying to avoid contact, and then Lashley gets him because he grabs him from behind, because Miz goes on the wrong side of the ring where MVP is. And so then Miz gets the advantage because Bobby Lashley misses an impact move. He hits the ring post, and then on the outside of the ring, Miz uses the ring post again. And then once Lashley gets his hands on Miz and he has it together, he finishes him off, right? Like, this is no different than if you want. Like, how do you think somebody like Daniel Bryan would work against Bobby Lashley if Bryan were a heel?
Oh, he'd probably be, he'd have to do all the bad things to make him try to win the match. Be a, like you said, the weasel aspect there of the Miz, and do everything to cheat his way to win to the top. That's what I think he would do.
Mike, the answer is watch Daniel Bryan against Brock Lesnar from Survivor Series 2018. Now, The difference in length of the match is, the Miz was involved in a TV main event versus a pay-per-view main event. So there's got to be a little bit longer matchup there between Brock and Bryan than Miz and Lashley. But the idea and the concept is the same. You have this monster against this smaller competitor, and that's how it has to build. That has to be the internal story of the matchup. And the whole opening Raw with a WWE championship match, when last week it closed with the WWE championship. This is wrestling promotion 101. It's continuing stories from the end of one show to the beginning of the next, because they're moving forward with something else. WWE has done it in the past. ECW in its prime was great at leaving a cliffhanger, leaving a hook for next week. WCW, when Eric Bischoff was really on fire with Nitro, would do this constantly. Cliffhangers. What's going to happen next week? You know what? Instead of making them wait the 3 hours, we're going to give it to them right now and then. And was it planned out that way? I don't think so, based on promotional materials, that one thing went out and then it changed, but that's what we got. So whether Bruce had it in his mind and had to talk Vince into it, or Vince had it in his mind and he changed it, I don't know. But the fact is that they wanted to use the briefcase. They got an effective 3 weeks out of it with The Miz in a main event, important spot as a bad guy. And now it's Bobby Lashley. And now it looks like it's Lashley against McIntyre for WrestleMania. It doesn't look like there's going to be a fight at Fastlane. So when they're putting together Fastlane, they're like, well, maybe we don't want to do Miz and Lashley again. Or maybe they're going to do a stipulation match. But I think that's what you're seeing is Lashley probably won't be on Fastlane, because Lashley's promos also were talking about, well, now I'm in the championship fight at WrestleMania. So based on that, they're skipping Lashley on Fastlane. Or it's going to be another rematch with Miz and he beats him up again. Or maybe it's Morrison or something like that. But I think that's the point with Lashley, is that they want to get through The Miz very quickly and on to McIntyre. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I think that they ended with The Miz last week. I think this was just overplayed last night to have this mirror. Again, last week I thought it was fantastic, perfect. You delayed the match three times. You had him win his championship there in the final ending of Raw to go off the air. And again, just to my point here, they squashed The Miz last night at the opening of Raw. Bobby Lashley could have just come out with a promo, have The Miz figure out a new feud for him here on out. No need to beat a dead horse. I think that's exactly what they did here to open up Monday Night Raw. Did you talk about the continuation aspect of things? Sure. If this feud is going to continue for a few more months, I'm all for it. But the fact that this is over and done with, when it ended last week, there was no need to have that at the beginning of Monday Night Raw. I thought it made The Miz look really weak here. But Bobby Lashley, happy for him on the opposite coin, makes him look much stronger here. And I hope he does have a good run as champion. And it looks like, yeah, it'll be him and Drew at WrestleMania 37. But perfect timing for Bobby Lashley to be WWE champion. And like I said, I hope he gets a long run at it.
And Miz is programmed for Bad Bunny. So
yes, exactly.
If you're going with the template of, you know what WrestleMania is, it's how do we move these pieces around the board so that we get to what we want?
Yep.
And that's how they decided to do it.
That's how they did it. I mean, may not agree with it, but it's over and done with.
That's okay. We're always our best fantasy booker.
That's
each
right.
Week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5thesportshub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and in Google Podcasts.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.